Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I'm joined by Dave Prentice, Adam Jones and Gav Buckland as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And, of course, as ever, plenty to get our teeth stuck into. And, of course, we will mainly be looking back at an important top four elevator. 18 victory at West Brom last night, a narrow one, not very pretty, but very effective, even if for a couple of hours at least. So we will go through that, sift through that game and the talking points, and of course, look ahead to Monday night's trip to Chelsea. Preno, we got there in the end last night, 1-0, Richarlison, the man of the moment. But as the clock ticked past the hour mark, were you confident we'd find a way through?
I wasn't, no, but maybe we should start having more confidence in Carlo now, because how many times has he done this? And basically caught us all, you know, all napping. It was a patchy performance at best. We started badly. You know, we allowed West Brom to get a bit of momentum and things weren't going particularly well. But then he changed the shape, you know, put a diamond formation in midfield. That gave us a measure of control. But one of those changes he made bore fruit within, was it like 35 seconds or something? You know, so he threw Gylfi Sigurdsson on. He told Lucas Digne to go away from the corner. And that little bit of quality, you know, just made the difference. So, yeah, maybe we should, you know, so just have more faith in Carlo. Ahead of the game, I was really confident about this match because I saw West Brom against Brighton last weekend and they were poor. Brighton should have absolutely blown them out of sight. And that confidence just went over the first 20 minutes. Andre Gomez wasn't at it. Decore was a little bit, you know, in and out. The two wide players just weren't really influencing it at all. And it was difficult to see where we were going to get a goal from. But, like I say, Carlo spotted this as well. He made changes. He affected those changes very quickly. And we got a massive result. Can't underestimate how important that result is in terms of the momentum it takes us, the confidence it takes going into a really tough game on Monday. And even just fleetingly getting into that top four, it just makes you think that little bit more optimistically about the rest of the season. So, no, I didn't see it coming, but, you know, I'm glad it did. And maybe we should be behind Carlo a bit more in future.
Carlo mentioned beforehand that it would be important just to touch top four, and we did for a couple of hours before Chelsea's victory at Anfield. But as Preno said, do you agree psychologically, even as a bit of a statement to the rest of the league, it was important on the night we had the ability to go forth, we took it.
Yeah, I think that's really crucial, isn't it? Because it's probably not just this season, over the last couple of years as well, we've had these kinds of opportunities in the past. You know, you think back to start of last season when we played Aston Villa in that game, you're thinking, oh, if we win, we go top of the league. And, you know, even back then, it would have been a psychological boost for us to be able to achieve that. But, you know, time and time again, over the last couple of years, we've kind of fell at the last hurdle when it comes to those type of games. So just to be able to finally move past that in this game, I think it should hopefully be a huge psychological boost to the side, because, you know, it's something that we said just before the Southampton game as well. You know, it's all well and good getting these big results against, you know, the likes of Liverpool, but your season really comes down to, you know, when you're chasing, you know, the top four or even just European places. Your season comes down to these type of matches, you know, when you're playing against the likes of West Brom away or Southampton at home. If you can't pick up 6 points out of matches like that, then you're not going to be able to finish in those Champions League places, especially with the amount of teams that are going to be chasing those spots in the league this season. So, you know, it's going to be a massive psychological boost for Everton to just, you know, it wasn't the best performance, as Preno was saying. You know, it was pretty lackluster at times, I would probably say, over the course of the 90 minutes. But at the end of the day, it's another 3 points in the bag. And, you know, we so often say about football that you know, the best teams win when they're not playing at their best. And that seems to be what Everton are doing at the minute, which is quite promising in a way when you look at it, because, you know, obviously Ancelotti knows that his team aren't playing some great football at the minute, but it just stands to reason that when they are playing good football again, hopefully the results will continue to flow. So, yeah, it will have been nice for those, you know, couple of hours for those players in the dressing rooms to see them up in fourth, and, you know, hopefully it should give them a bit of motivation going to the sides that eventually knock them out of that fourth position on Monday. You know, go and beat them and, you know, reclaim that place.
Gav, is Prenner right in saying that we just need to have a little bit more trust than we already have in Carlo to get us through these games?
Yes, said all along this season that I think if you're an experienced, you need to be an experienced manager in the circumstances that the season's being played. Carlo has that experience and knowledge of being, I don't know how long he's been a manager now, is it 30 years? I don't know, 20 years, 20 odd years. So yeah, absolutely trust him to make the right decisions, which not necessarily happened all the time, but I think what he's been good at, I think, by and large, is there's been some really good substitutions this season, and you saw that yesterday. It's quite obvious that the midfield wasn't balanced at the start of the game. I mean, you've got four players there. I think three of them are probably, we'd say, you know, attacking flair players. You can include Gomez in that, and Zaccore's box to box. He didn't have a natural, what you would call, a ball winner within that, and I think we suffered as a consequence. It was misshapen, wasn't working effectively. And so we corrected that with Alan. And then Sigurdsson, we just needed somebody with a bit of craft, a bit of, you know, a bit of imagination. And he got that as well. I mean, Sigurdsson, he's a funny one, Sigurdsson, isn't he? I don't want to bring assists into it, but I will do. I think his last eight games, is it three goals, five assists, something like that? You know, he's produced at the big moments. This week, I mean, let's face it, he's made both goals, hasn't he? So it's been it's been good to see that. But you've got to trust Carlo with his experience and wherewithal in these matters to change things around. And this is the thing, isn't it? You know, we're getting it to the business end of the season, and the difference. You know, the difference between having Carlo and previous managers, he's got the experience and knowledge and how to manage even in these like sorts of difficult times. And so that brings even more trust, doesn't it? You've got to. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, you know, you would appoint him, isn't it? Because you trust him, right? That's why you buy players that maybe you wouldn't give. You know, would you buy a 29-year-old, 27-year-old, James Rodriguez? Would you trust another manager with those three players? You're backing them there, aren't you? So, yeah, you've got two. And more importantly, I think the players trust them as well, don't they?
Well, on that, Pren, I think Carlo had sort of fleetingly mentioned in his pre-match presser about rotation, and rotation is important to keep players fresh, but also keep them motivated. And that feels to me as though one of his big successes so far, you know, so far as we hit 26 games, is keeping the squad motivated. I think it's been, you know, I think that only comes, has to only come with the experience that he has.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I mean, I don't think any of us saw that starting lineup coming, not for the first time. I mean, only two changes, and, you know, Bernard and Iwobi being the two that came in that, you know, you certainly wouldn't have guessed that before the match. Josh King, once again, couldn't get further than the bench for like 5 minutes. So, we couldn't quite see the bottom of that. But Gylfi Sigurdsson's post-match interview was interesting again. You know, he almost underlined what you said there about the faith that the players have in him. Numerous other players have referenced it, the fact that he's won everything in the game, therefore they need to listen to what he has to say. And it was almost like a photo fit of how Carlo anticipated the game going from what Gylfi was saying. You know, he knew they were going to defend deep. We knew we'd have to be patient. We'd have to wait. Probably a set piece might settle it. You know, the manager's saying these things to the players pre-match, and it doesn't sound particularly inspiring. But when that actually plays itself out and these things do happen, you start to think, well, yeah, he's right, actually. You know, what he's saying does work here. So, you know, when he names his team for Monday night and he throws a curveball in that we're not expecting, and a player starts the game that we're not expecting to start, there's faith in that decision-making process. It doesn't always work out that way. I'm thinking back to, you know, the infamous Newcastle game. And I've mentioned it before on these podcasts, when the Newcastle game at home, where we drew 2-2, when Newcastle had just scored, Everton took the centre, played it back, and it went to Fabian Delph. And rather than roll it back to Jordan Pickford to waste 30 seconds, put the ball into touch and the whistle goes, he launched it forward at Calvert-Lewin because the manager exhorted him to do so. And afterwards, you know, Fabian Delph said, I wish I'd done what I wanted to do rather than the manager, because, you know, we might not have dropped those 2 points, but they listened to the manager and he went wrong. But I can't think of another occasion since then where he's made a bad call, where it's actually, you know, sort of not come off, even to the point of telling Lucas Digne to get away from that corner last night and let Gylfi Sigurdsson take it. You know, just, it worked. So all these instances, you know, sort of stack up and allow the players to have absolute faith in him. So, yeah, it's really reassuring to see. It's going to be a stretch, you know, sort of to keep that going till the end of the season. Some very tough fixtures still to come. But we're going in the right direction. That's all we can say. Got to be positive and, you know, enjoy what we're seeing, because it's much better than we were seeing this time last year.
And you've written about Sigurdsson and you know, in terms of keeping players motivated and on edge and ready to come into the team and do as asked, there's probably no better example this season than Sigurdsson, because I think in the summer, I think many of us were fearful for his Everton career. You know, we hadn't seen this new formation. You know, we'd been playing 4-4-2. He'd been playing in a deep midfield role. He made no secret of the fact that he didn't like playing there. He didn't look a particularly happy bunny. But he's perhaps arguably never been more influential in a season. And I would even say perhaps even more influential when he scored 13 goals.
I think that's what made last season such a disappointment, wasn't it? I mean, there was a lot of players that struggled last season, but I don't think any struggled more than Gylfi Sigurdsson. You know, to go from being the team's joint top goal scorer to, you know, floundering, you know, sort of on the fringes of the team, I would say, you know, struggling to fight for a place in the side that wasn't even his preferred position. I think that was quite disappointing for a lot of Everton fans to see. And obviously over, as you quite rightly say, over the summer, I don't think anybody would have argued if Everton would have tried to get Gylfi Sigurdsson out the door, to be honest, in the summer transfer window. But, you know, as things have transpired over, well, probably recent weeks and months, more than anything else, you know, we've introduced that sort of number 10 role almost back into the side over the last few weeks. And, you know, Sigurdsson, you know, fair play to him, he's absolutely thrived. He's always somebody that, even when he was playing in centre midfield, he was always someone that Ancelotti clearly trusted, and, you know, obviously he really likes putting him into the team. You know, he obviously thinks he's got a lot of quality, but I think Sigurdsson can only really produce that quality when he's at that end of the pitch. You know, I think he's always had that, you know, delivery from the set piece, but I think it's his open play assists that have really got me so far this season. You know, his couple against the Spurs in the League Cup, I thought were really strong, and his one against Southampton, of course, on Monday was really strong as well. And it's, you know, it was that kind of thing that we were really missing from Sigurdsson last season. You know, he wasn't really getting into those areas around the edge of the box to either, you know, have a crack himself or to try and thread the ball through to one of the attackers. And I think that's probably what the side was missing a little bit. And especially over the last couple of games, you know, with James Rodriguez being out, we've needed somebody to have that little injection of creativity. And fair play to Sigurdsson, he's absolutely stepped up and he's taken that responsibility on for himself. And, you know, I think that is really interesting to see. You know, he's somebody who's got, at the end of the season, he'll have a year left on his current contract, really. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of happens with him in the future now, because he's still Everton's club record signing. You know, he's, as you say, I would probably agree with 15 goal involvements I think he's got so far this season now, 6 goals, 9 assists. You know, he's proven himself to be as influential as ever over the course of his Everton career. So, you know, what do Everton do? They're probably not going to be able to get a decent fee for him. Is it a case of trying to give him another year or two on reduced terms after the end of next season? It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But I think there's a lot more Everton fans warming to the idea of Sigurdsson staying here now, and that's testament not just to Carlo Ancelotti finding a system that suits him, but for Sigurdsson in in terms of, you know, not giving up, giving his all for the team and making sure that he is an influential member of the squad still.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, definitely interested to see what happens with Sigurdsson in sort of 15, 16 months' time, isn't it, at the end of his deal? And I think he'll be sort of 32, maybe 33 going on in that direction. So interesting to see what he wants to do at that stage of his career as well. But Gav, a word for Richarlison and talking about Carlo Ancelotti's motivational techniques. He's not a manager to publicly criticise players. But following the Newcastle game, when he made quite clear that Richarlison had to work harder, that was as close to a rollicking as you'll get from Carlo in public. But it's certainly had the desired effect.
It has. I think there's two things going here. There's the Carlo criticism, and also it's the system we're playing now, aren't we? You know, that we played over the last few games, and we spoke about this before the derby. You know, I spoke about playing two up top, and I think you get the impression. I mean, Richarlison played wide left, hasn't he? We played 4-3-3 wide left. I like him there, I like his pace, I like what he brings defensively, and he can still score goals. But he's obviously, I think he must prefer down the middle a little bit, or just left-hand side of, just a little bit on the left-hand side. And that gets him more involved, more, and gives him a greater opportunity to score, I think, and more actively involved in the game. And we've seen that, haven't we, over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Has he scored last four Premier League games or something like that? Scored two against Tottenham. And a lot of them are good finishes as well. Not tap-ins, where he showed his quality. So I think it's Carlo's words and changing the system, I think, to suit him. And also, what that brings into play, if you play like the Diamond last night, so 4-2-3-1, it also brings Sigurdsson into play then, doesn't it? But you don't get Sigurdsson playing 4-3-3 really effectively. The byproduct of that, though, is, Phil, is that are you getting the best out of Calvert-Lewin by doing that? He probably does prefer playing in a 4-3-3, where you've got width out wide and people can get with the ball in. And, you know, as you say, he's really effective at getting goals in the 6-yard box, which you're likely to do in a 4-3-3.
It's almost, yeah, it's a good point, Gav, because I was thinking about this. It's almost like it's been the balance, because I think actually between the pair of them have only ever scored in the same Premier League game, if I remember rightly, once this season, and that was at Palace, and it was Richarlison was a penalty, and it does feel as though the system suits one more than the other. And I think Carlo alluded to the fact that when Richarlison plays left wing effectively, he finds it harder to create and get opportunities.
And that's Calvert-Lewin. That suits Calvert-Lewin. When Richarlison plays through the middle, that doesn't suit Calvert-Lewin. But we probably get the best out of Gylfi in that system. And it's an incestor one. There's a little bit of... I'm trying to think of... I think you remember the year Newcastle finished fifth. I think Denver Barr and Papi Cisse both got like 20 goals each, but neither of them scored in the same game, you know. And there's a little bit of that at the moment. So it's an interesting one. I personally, if it were me, I'd play to Richarlison's strengths rather than Calvert-Lewin, because I think he's a better player. Simple as. I mean, when fully focused, I've said this before, fully focused Richarlison is our best player, our most important player. And he'd be the one I'd maybe try to get the most of more and get Calvert-Lewin to fit in with that. We look far more solid as a consequence, I think. So, yeah, it's an interesting one, but he's his top player, Richarlison, isn't he? Well, he will become a top player if he carries on. But he's great to see him scoring goals at the right time as well, right time of the season.
Absolutely, here. Preno, last night's win took the Blues on to 46 points. Last season, at the end of 38 games, they only finished with 49. I mean... many signs of progress, but it just struck me as quite a nice, you know, concise pair of figures to compare of how much progress has been made. And is that progress, in your opinion, now with 12 games to go, consolidated into a genuine top four challenge?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, the statistic that really jumped out for me was we've now got more points at this stage of the season than we had in the Roberto Martinez 2013-14 campaign, was it, where, you know, we finished up with the record Premier League points tally and again just missed out on the top four, you know, being pipped to it by Arsenal. But I can't remember exactly. I know the Crystal Palace game, you know, threw us over in that season. But we finished the season relatively strongly. Whether we can finish this season as strongly, we still need to find out, because the one quality that we've missed this season is consistency, and we've started to get it now, you know, with the last three games, clean sheets, victories. But, you know, does that equate to consistency three matches? I don't think it does. That's just like a little, you know, short span. We need to do that over six games and seven games, you know, go to Stamford Bridge on Monday and not lose, and then, you know, so win the game after that, that kind of thing. I still think top four is probably going to be a bridge too far. I think, you know, most realistic Evertonians, you know, would accept that. But it doesn't stop you from getting excited and dreaming about the possibility of it. You know, when you see results like we're getting at the moment, like going to Anfield and, you know, winning there. Imagine everyone wins there now, don't they? But, you know, so getting results like that. And then, you know, so the optimism that can build going forward into other games. So I don't know. All I can say, to give it like decent perspective, is, you know, we are on the right path and we are significantly better than where we were last season. And we've only had, you know, one really effective transfer window from Carlo. You know, so once he gets another, you know, two or three players in that he wants to add to that squad, if we can do that this summer, then hopefully we'll see, you know, significant improvements again. Maybe he's ahead of the game at the moment. Maybe, you know, so his progress has actually taken him by surprise and he's a little bit further ahead than he expected to be at this time. But he's not the kind of manager that will seek to lower those expectations and say, hang on a minute, let's be sensible. You know, so we shouldn't be looking at top four. He's at the, you know, cut from the cloth that says, oh, why shouldn't we? You know, so we're there, let's go for it. And I like that. That's refreshing. And that, you know, so rubs off on everybody else around the football club. So, yeah, a lot of excitement at the moment. And, you know, long may it continue, hopefully from Monday and beyond.
Yeah, Adam, I was going to bring make that the next question. And Carl, Prenner was sort of alluded to it there about Carlo's clear excitement. You know, we covered his press conference last night after the game. Obviously, I was down at the Hawthorns, but he's not trying to sort of hide or temper that excitement. We went fourth, and he's thrilled about it. You know, he genuinely, it feels like there's been a shift for me. He, you know, a few weeks ago, he was saying, look, it's the dream, but we think it could be difficult, maybe complicated. It feels like he's changed his tune.
Yeah, I feel like the belief is probably seeping through to him as well. I mean, he was just absolutely delighted in part of that press conference. I think the bit of the press conference that got me was when there was a bit of a lull and he was asking what the Chelsea v Liverpool score was. And it was just after Werner had scored and, like, he didn't realise it had been disallowed. So he got told that Chelsea were winning and he was like, oh, no, we've been knocked out of fourth place. And you can see he was, like, jokingly, really disappointed about it. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that Evertonians want to see, isn't it? Because, you know, obviously over the last few weeks, and I think it was important for Carlo Ancelotti to be as he was a few weeks ago. You know, he was very, very tempered in his response. You know, it was very much, yeah, we're doing this right now. We need to do this in the future, et cetera, et cetera. And there's still a sense of that, obviously, because, you know, the job's not done. And, you know, Carlo Ancelotti, he was very much saying, you know, it's not just the Chelsea game that we've got to focus on. It's 11 games after that. We've got to keep the focus on those. And, you know, we can see what happens at the end of it. But I think perhaps Carlo Ancelotti is being a little bit surprised at what his squad can put together. You know, three you know, battling results in a row, shall we say. I don't think they were necessarily fantastic performances. But, you know, they've shown... I think the phrase he used was like high spirit, something like that. You know, it's very, very spirited sort of performances that have got Everton to where they are at the minute. And, you know, if he can then build on that with some better quality football and in terms of performances, then, you know, I think Carlo Ancelotti thinks there's every right to be excited. So it is really good to see him, you know, smiling and happy after these results, because, you know, he's over the course of his time at Everton, he's not been one to go over the top in terms of excitement or disappointment throughout a lot of games. So to see him like this, you know, a man with so much experience in the game. You know, it's really promising for Everton fans to see, I'd say.
Absolutely. Gav, it was interesting. I was speaking to our mutual friend, Mr. Greg O'Keefe, during the game last night, and we were both going, we're playing terribly. We're going to have to seriously, you know, pull up our socks and seriously improve our performances if we're going to entertain this top four race beyond, you know, anything beyond this. But then we both almost simultaneously came to the realisation, how many times have we actually, in inverted commas, played well this season? You know, been comfortable, won a comfortable margin, you know, not had to scrap and fight and show spirit.
Yeah.
And less than a handful of times I could think off the top of my head. And so you think to yourself, we've gone fourth and haven't really played that well.
Yeah. Well, I think you could, apart from Manchester City, you could probably say that about most teams, couldn't you, in the Premier League this season, which has helped us and has helped other teams, hasn't it, really? So I'm contractually obliged to say it's not a normal season, the normal rules don't apply. Having said that, I think you're right. I think we have played well, but not necessarily reflected in the scorelines. I mean, we played well at Wolves, didn't we? Played well at Leicester, played well at Tottenham. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's only the Brighton and West Brom games early on. I think we even conceded first and was against West Brom, was it? It's classic. In some respects, it's classic David Moyes 2004-05 season, isn't it, really, where
you've said it.
Well, you know what? This may actually not be typical, but I'm actually reasonably positive and nice about top four, and I see it's definitely been in the mix. When you see the other teams around us and you think about why not, and I think Leicester probably look a little bit vulnerable at the moment, don't they, because they've got a shed load of injuries. But going back to we are. I mean, if you don't concede, does not give you the chance, and defensively we've looked okay. I thought we were a bit shaky on occasions last night, but we've not conceded for three games, have we? That doesn't half help, that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you start off and you're not going...
Go on, sorry, Gav. Go on.
No, so if you start off thinking we're probably not going to concede more than one goal at the moment, with Godfrey playing in the middle of the back, then it gives you the chance then, doesn't it?
It's an interesting point that actually, Preno, and, you know, look, it's a positive headache, as we say in this game, for Carlo. But what's he do when Mina comes back? Because Godfrey is, and has been for a long time, undroppable.
Yeah.
But then Mina has actually had a very good season. Godfrey can play left back. It's difficult. It seems like it's a balance to me. And it's not something you want to upset because, as Gav says, defending very, very well at the moment. And we're at the business end. And if you don't concede, you're always in with that shout.
It is, I mean, and I like to see the back four as to being like the one constant in a team. If you get a back four that, you know, are comfortable playing together well, don't change it, don't mix it up, because that's, you know, the area of the team that benefits from knowing each other's game inside out, especially when you're, you know, defending zonally and all this kind of stuff that we do at set pieces. Ben Godfrey is undroppable. You know, he's got to play regardless of where that is. And I'm reasonably comfortable with him moving back across to full back, you know, so Rel right back. To allow Mina to come back in. Holgate's not done a great deal wrong, but, you know, there are just like one or two moments. He was involved in that early, you know, sort of penalty shot, wasn't he? You think, well, you know, so maybe. But no, he's done well. He offers more to us defensively than maybe Seamus does, but there were occasions last night when you thought, oh, Seamus would have been in that team. He'd have had the opportunity to bomb on there and give us like that bit more penetration. The bottom line is that he's got options, which is good, and we'll need them because, you know, the games are coming thick and fast, as we've said, and you've got to try and mix that up a little bit. And bear in mind that we've won these last couple of games without James Rodriguez, you know, so without Tom Davis, who's been playing really well over the last few games. So, you know, it's like two significant members of the team you've been able to take out and, you know, allow to overcome little knocks. Obviously, Yerry Mina's is more than just a little knock. But I'll add Michael Keane into that undroppable as well, by the way. I think he's got an excellent season so far. And so Michael Keane and Ben Godfrey, wherever they play, well, obviously Michael Keane can only play in one position, but, you know, Ben Godfrey, wherever he plays, those two have to be in. And I'm reasonably comfortable, you know, with the others, like, you know, sort of mixing around a little bit. As it seems like Carlo is, he's quite good with mixing the squad up and rotating it a little bit. And I mean, last night, only 8 players on the bench, is that right? Rather than 9. And
2 goalkeepers.
Yeah, 2 goalkeepers, none of whom are Robin Olsen, and a lot of kids as well. It's you know, he's mixing it up a lot at the moment, and it seems to be working. So, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just keep doing what he's doing.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Addy, Carlo was asked an interesting question by Don King of the Mail last night about, you know, did Carlo think that our rivals really considered us a rival, and did he think that other teams would look at us and question our staying power? I mean, but, you know, I think people perhaps from outside the club don't realise that, unfortunately, in recent history, you know, with 12 games to go, having gone fourth and still in the FA Cup, we haven't really experienced being at the business end of a season with plenty to play for. So the optimism internally is understandable, but do you think there is some scepticism from outside the club about Everton being genuinely in the mix for top four?
I think it probably is, and I think it's probably down to the issue that we were discussing before, which is consistency. But, you know, I think it's an issue that a lot of teams have struggled with over the course of this season, obviously. But, you know, we had Everton going top of the league going into the first international break, wasn't it? And then we had that obviously pretty poor, like, October sort of November period, which saw them sort of drop back down again. And I think that's probably still sticking in the minds of many sort of pundits who are looking at the league in a wider context. And, you know, people will obviously see only having eight subs on the bench yesterday, 2 of them goalkeepers, you know, a couple of teenagers again on the bench. So, you know, people will be looking at the squad depth and thinking, oh, well, if Everton get a couple of injuries here and there, are they going to be able to cope, etc.? But, yeah, I think the optimism within the club is, as you say, quite rightly understandable, because, you know, how many times over the last few seasons have we gone, all right, well, so it's early exits from the cup. We're recovering from what was an absolutely shambolic start to the season. So we're starting on the back foot, just trying to work our way back up to 8th or something like that to try and make it a respectable sort of campaign. So to find Everton, you know, on the cusp of 4th, as you say, still in the FA Cup as well, even though it's a obviously very tough tie in the next round of the FA Cup. But, you know, to still have Everton in that competition at this stage and still be very much involved in the fight for Europe, I think that's got to have optimism quite high. And I think, you know, I think eventually that will sort of emanate from outside the club as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's Carlo Ancelotti who's at the helm this time. You know, he had a bit of a patch-up job on his hands when he came in and had to try and save Everton from, again, what was a shambolic start to last season. And, you know, he very much did the job in that sense. So this is his first real attempt at trying to get Everton into these European places. So surely that's going to, you know, as we now go into the business end of the season, if Everton can just keep up this relative consistency that they've had over the last couple of weeks, at least, they can just keep that up, as Preno says, for maybe the next 6 or 7 games, then I think everybody's got to start taking real notice of Everton, to be honest, because, you know, barring, you know, City away, Spurs at home, and obviously this Chelsea game coming up, Everton's fixture list relatively isn't really that hard compared to some of the other teams who are up there and challenging. So, you know, with Leicester having a couple of really big injuries on their hands as well, could they be the ones who are maybe going to be looking over their shoulders? So, you know, if Everton can just keep up this consistency, then there's every chance that they could mount a real fight in these latter stages.
Okay, and Gav, we'll move on to Chelsea. Adam mentioned it there Monday night. If I'm not mistaken, they're unbeaten under Thomas Tuchel, aren't they? Seem to have tightened things up. You know, we spoke about our good defence.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that game generally? Head of Monday.
I haven't seen them last night. Tough game. I mean, after City, I mean, I noticed before that lots of teams have struggled. I mean, Chelsea have struggled this season, but obviously since Thomas Tuchel come in, they've tightened things up and they look a very dangerous team. I watched them last night and they've got some great individual talent. You can also see the effects of Tuchel's coaching, to be honest with you, in terms of how well drilled they are with the ball. Passed the ball really well last night. And you'd be know the, as I say, that the individual talent they've got. They've got a depth in the squad as well. It's going to mean after City, I would imagine Chelsea away is probably the toughest fixture you could have anywhere in the league at the moment. And I think it's going to be a really tough game. I mean, it's one that you take a draw all day long there, really, wouldn't you? Take a draw as much as to stop them getting 3 points, if you know what I mean. I think that as much as anything else. So, really tough game. But at the same time, we know what Ancelotti's main strength is against a big team, City, keep it tight, and wait for your moment to strike, and we've done that pretty well, you know, against the top six or seven teams away from home this season. And I fully expect to see a game that's probably suited to him as a manager, but it's going to be very tough because they have got real quality, Chelsea, and they've got a system that works for them at the moment.
Agreement with Gav there. I think it's you know, certainly one of our toughest games of the season so far.
It is, but it goes back to what I said earlier about having trust and faith in Carlo Ancelotti. In that, on the outside looking in, I don't think anybody, you know, sort of nationally independent judges will be predicting anything other than a Chelsea win, because, you know, they're 100% under Tuchel. He's got them playing, you know, so a style of football that's, you know, suited to him as a manager. And as Gavin says, they've got some real, you know, sort of top talent in there that can create something out of nothing, as they did last night at Anfield. But you just think that this is a kind of game that, you know, Carlo can produce another of those tactical masterclasses out, you know, where he will set his team up in a disciplined fashion to defend very deep and deny space, and prevent Chelsea doing what they do well, and then maybe rely, you know, on a set piece, you know, from Sigurdsson or from James Rodriguez, should he be fit, you know, to actually create something. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we can go there and get something. I mean, people aren't anticipating this, and maybe I'm not myself, but in the light of last night and in the light of, you know, sort of recent results, you know, where I've been preaching trust Carlo, I'm beginning to try and convince myself that maybe we should do for this one as well. And we have been to Stamford Bridge in recent years. Was it a couple of years ago when Yerry Mina made his debut and, you know, drew 0-0 and looked fairly comfortable? I know this is like, you know, two very different teams now, but it's not an arena as such that should hold any fears, certainly given the fact that it's empty. And, you know, and everybody's away form is so different this year. And look at the statistic now. Everton have now got the best away record. Gavin here very kindly supplied me the stats before the West Brom game, that, you know, our away record now is the best at this stage of the season than it has ever been. Better even than 84-85, better than 69-70, better than this curious anomaly of a season in 1908-09, when bizarrely, you know, so we made a great start. We actually finished second that year. And then I think 1930-31 was the other one in the, you know, a second division season, which, you know, came quite close. So it underlines this season as a curious one. It's odd, you know, so a lot of teams are doing really well away from home. But why shouldn't that continue if that's been the case at the moment this season? You know, so why can't we go there, keep things tight and frustrate them? It's going to be tough, of course it is, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's not like, you know, going to face Manchester City right now, the way that they're playing, you know, and you really wouldn't fear for anybody's chances, to be honest. So, yeah, it's a possibility. You know, I understand why it's going to be very, very tough, but, you know, don't be totally down on the idea of Everton going there and getting a result. If it is a draw, as Gavin suggested, that would be an absolutely godsend of a result. Anything better, we're going to win the league.
Okay, then, Ad, we'll start with you on this pod. What's your prediction for Monday night, where you will be in the position at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, looking forward to a little trip to Stamford Bridge. Given Chelsea's form, and as Gav rightly says, you know, I don't think at the minute there's many tougher, apart from Man City, there's not many tougher places to be going in the Premier League at the minute. Still yet to lose under Thomas Tuchel. They've got a lot of pace in attack, which is what particularly concerns me. Even though we do play, you know, quite a deep defensive line, I still think they're going to be able to exploit some gaps there. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw, and I think that'll be a pretty nice result for Everton, if I'm honest.
Absolutely. Gav, well, how do you think it's going to go?
I was going to say 1-1. I think I'm going to go for a Carlo Ancelotti classic Serie A, going away to a big team and getting a goalless draw. That serves a purpose. So I'm going to go with the classic Italian away scoreline in club football of 0-0 and a terribly tight, freezing Stamford Bridge, just to make you feel better about going down there.
Yeah, thanks.
the beautiful game in many guises. I actually agree with Gavin. I think that would be, I think that's eminently possible. You know, Chelsea have got a lot of pace, but we defend deep and we defend deep very comfortably. How do you see it going?
I was going to replicate Gavin's start and go for 0-0, but I won't. I'll be different. And just to make Adam feel even better, Stamford Bridge is one of my favourite away trips because of all those little coffee shops and all those pubs and all those places to visit, you know, around the ground. And oh, they're all closed, aren't they?
None of which I can go to.
Yeah. Oh, never mind. It'll still be a good trip anyway. You'll enjoy it. Because I think that it will be a Carlo tactical masterclass who will absolutely suffocate the game. And I love that piece that you did earlier, Adam, about why we're doing so well away from home. And Carlo saying that it's because we were scared, I think was the phrase he used, and worried about our away performances. So we focus even more and we focus even more intently defensively and produce better disciplined defensive performances. So you're going to be scared about going to Stamford Bridge. You're going to be concerned. So you're going to focus even more. And I think that will be sufficient to grind up that clean sheet. And then very similar to the opening day at Tottenham, where we get a free kick on the left with about half an hour to go. And Gylfi or Luca Digne, one or the other, bends a ball in and Calvert-Lewin gets on the end of it and we win 1-0.
Wow.
And the rest of the country sits up and takes notice then.
I do like the idea of Carlo sort of maintaining that level of fear, maybe by casually WhatsApping Timo Werner's highlights to Ben Godfrey or something, you know. Okay, good stuff. Well, you know, I think we're taking any of those results, but particularly Preno's prediction of a 1-0 victory. So we shall see. Adam is going down to Stamford Bridge Monday. I'm covering the game also back at base. So we've got you covered on Monday and, of course, across the weekend as well. So thank you very much for listening, chaps. Thank you very much for your company. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.